Desert.
Vayikach Moshe etzes Mos Yosef imo ki ashbeash beas bnei Yisrael. The shout out to Yosef. Why does the Torah have to document that Moshe Rabbeinu took Yosef's bones? Part of the reason is that there's a debt of gratitude to a person they never met. Because Yosef stabilized the situation in Mitzrayim, and the schus of Yosef and of his behavior in Mitzrayim, in some way, allowed Am Yisrael to leave Mitzrayim, to maintain their identity in Mitzrayim. So there's a debt of gratitude to someone they never met. Gavriel, hold off for a second. Okay? You guys have a debt of gratitude. Unfortunately, last night, someone very, very influential in this yeshiva, in this area, and in this country passed away. His name was Moshe Moshkovitz. Moshe Moshkovitz, or as he was called, Moshko, was a national legend. He was one of the orphans who was exiled from the Gush in 1948, 2 days before the Declaration of Independence, and 250 defenders of the Gush, defenders of the southern flank of Israel, were slaughtered when the Gush fell. He was one of the driving forces behind many, many, a national legend. I would say probably dozens of national projects across the country. But his love, his true love, was this yeshiva that he founded. He was the founder of this yeshiva. And him and Rav Amital were the brain trust, were the brain child. This is their brain child. They formed the yeshiva. And to this day, even last week, I don't know when he was last here in yeshiva, but I saw him about a month ago. He still was the chairman of the board of the yeshiva, would come in at the age of 97 and make decisions. But it was a real visionary. Like I heard him a couple of years ago, in 5 years we'll do this in Gush, and in 10 years we'll do this in Gush, and we're going to settle that area. He also brought Rabbi Riskin to Efrat, and he built Efrat from the ground up, and many, many, many other national projects. So this was his love, and he talked about how much he loved Yeshiva Har Etzion. He was the chairman of the board. And unfortunately, he was Nifter, but you'll never meet him. But you really owe a debt of gratitude. So just look around you and think of him today. I'll try to send out one or two eulogies in the Israeli press so you can read a little bit about him. Okay, so it's only appropriate. And I'm going to share some Torah of Rav Amital today, Sunday, obviously. In Mara, HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates a training ground for mitzvos. Some religions have faith, prayer, eschatology, messianism, afterlife, but no commandments. Even religions that do possess commandments, sometimes mitzvahs or commandments are just so sketchy and loosely oriented that they fade into disrepair or fade into neglect. But mitzvahs anchor our relationship with Hashem minute by minute, situation by situation. The mitzvahs will come at Har Sinai. Mara is a training ground for mitzvahs. Hashem wants to orient us that religion is going to include mitzvahs, not just redemption, not just miracles, not just conversation with Hashem. So Hashem chooses three mitzvahs. Two of them make a lot of sense. One choice is a little mystifying. Hashem chooses dinim. Religion, Judaism, of course, speaks about building a better society, not running away from society, as many Near Eastern religions speak about, disassociating from society, trying to improve society. Ethics, morality, justice improve society. A judicial system ensures those ethics are implemented and enforced. So Hashem chose dinim for obvious reasons. Shabbos, theologically foundational, communal coalescence. Everything about Shabbos makes sense to us. As I mentioned to you, over Shabbos, we have to remember that Shabbos is also transcendent. It's not just human anchored. But Shabbos makes sense to us. What's the third mitzvah Hashem chooses at Mara to train the Jewish people about mitzvahs? According to many versions, Rashi's version, paraduma. That seems preposterous. They didn't yet have tumah. Tumah only existed after Har Sinai. If a Jew were to touch a sheretz, a dead sheretz in the desert, he wouldn't be tameh. Moshe wasn't yet tameh when he carried Yosef's bones because tumah didn't yet exist as a halachic concept. Not only that, even if they were tameh, they didn't have a base of mikdash or a mishkan or a kohen to process paraduma. It's purely theoretical. Why was Hashem choosing Paraduma as one of the big three? Rav Amital answered the question based on ideas in the Kutsk and the Maharal that Judaism, Yiddishkeit, is a blend of mitzvahs we're meant to understand and mitzvahs we'll never understand. Some people have a difficult time processing mitzvahs we can understand. The Rambam is very, very angry almost with people who feel that understanding a mitzvah reduces its holiness, as if you're only supposed to perform a mitzvah because the Kodesh Baruch Hu commanded and there's no logic and that logic isn't available to us. That's the underpinnings of the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvot, in which he tries to find logic in the Morid Avuchim for so many mitzvahs. There is a logic to many, many, most mitzvahs, you could say, and we're able to uncover that logic, and that logic doesn't dilute the piety or the devotion within the mitzvah performance. But just the same, there are some mitzvahs that lie beyond human comprehension. And Paraduma is a quintessential chok, because it's illogical, and it's also pretzeled logic. It's not just illogical, it's twisted logic. Because the people who officiate Paraduma themselves become Tamei. So they create Tara for you, but the Mitarim become Tamei. Can't understand it. And Hashem is introducing Paraduma to remind us of that blend between the rational and the mystical, the irrational. This is captured, Rav Amital felt, in a very, very fascinating story, which you're probably familiar with in Kiddushin. Dama ben Asina is a non-Jew in Ashkelon. One year, he finds these gemstones that are necessary for the Big Day Kahuna, the Avnei Shoham. The Chachamim come and visit him, and they want to pay him a king's ransom for those precious stones, but his father's sleeping on the key of the safe. By the way, he doesn't want to wake his father. Everyone should listen carefully, even if you're not listening to the Dvar Torah. This is the one Gemara I don't want you to follow. I tell my kids all the time, if someone comes by to offer me a lot of money and I'm sleeping, please wake me up, okay? Don't be such a tzaddik. And I think I'm speaking on behalf of all of your parents. If someone comes by with a lot of money, don't say, oh, I know the Gemara in Kiddushin, I'm not going to wake mom and dad up. Wake us up. Wake us up from a lot of other Narishkai. Wake us up, okay? I'll make up the sleep. Don't listen to this Gemara. In any event, because Dama ben Asina doesn't want to wake up his father, so he loses the money he could have gained for that Neshoah. Next year, Dama ben Asina, as a reward, is given a paraduma, which is worth 10 times the amount of these gemstones. So the Chachamim is saying, now we're not going to offer you a million, we'll offer you 10 million for the paraduma that you have received. And Dama says, you know what? Don't pay me paraduma money. Pay me Kibbutz Avayim money. The money I lost last year for Kibbutz Avayim, $1 million of the gemstones, because I was Mekayim Kibbutz Avayim, that's the money I want. Paraduma money, don't pay me. Well, also weird, right? Why would you negotiate by lowering your price? You want the money? Weird Gemara. So Rav Amital explains that Dama ben Asina was an honest person. He says, in my religion, there's no place for chok. There's no place for irrational mitzvahs. Last year, I fulfilled Kibbutz Avayim. That's a mitzvah I understand. I deserve money for my sacrifice. But paraduma money, there's no role for irrational mitzvahs in my religion. It would be dishonest of me to take paraduma money. This para means nothing to me, and I can't even imagine it meaning anything to you. So to collect money for some object, an article, that has absolutely no reference point, it's too dishonest for me. Last year's Mekayim Kibbutz Avayim. That makes sense. I deserve Kibbutz Avayim payback. So Yiddishkeit contains that blend between Chok and Mishpat. Sham, Sam lo Chok, or Mishpat, Sham niso. Kodesh Baruch Hu delivered Mishpat, Dinim, Shabbos, and irrational mitzvos. Chukav Mishpatav Yisrael, lo asachen lechogoy. This unique balance between chukav and mishpatav is a unique delivery to Am Yisrael. In fact, Rav Amital told us that when a Baal Tshuva would approach him, seeking to rebuild his religious life, Rav Amital would counsel him to take three mitzvahs. A mitzvah he understands to start with, just to orient yourself. Not necessarily dinim, but a mitzvah you understand. Shabbos, for obvious reasons. By the way, a little point here, when you leave yeshiva, especially during the 15 years or 10 years when you're in college, university, graduate school, especially till you build a home and you get your spiritual feet under you, Shabbos is crucial. If you just sleep, eat, relax over Shabbos, you're blowing an opportunity. Shabbos is your regeneration. It's time for you to think about, how am I going to learn over Shabbos? What am I going to do over Shabbos? It doesn't only have to be learning, but you have to plan Shabbos. Shabbos has to be a planned event when you're outside of yeshiva, because it's your one chance to walk away from your schedule. Shabbos, a rational mitzvah, and Rav Amital told them to choose an irrational mitzvah, a mitzvah you don't understand at this point, not necessarily paraduma, as a recipe for trying to build religious orientation and religious modality. So a little bit of Torah Rav Amital to start the week, and Mirtz Hashem, the neshama of Mashko should have an aliyah. We should be zocha to learn in the yeshiva that he built and to continue to make him proud. Have a good day, everyone.